You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined by Rob Rang. Glad to have you joining us for our Thursday episode, day two of free agency. Plenty of going on around the league. A kind of quiet day so far for the Seahawks, but yesterday ended up being a day full of news for Seattle. A big trade. We're going to break that down here momentarily. Today's show is brought your way by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Now for our lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We've talked about it countless times over the past month and a half. Russell Wilson, he's been clamoring for improved pass protection. The Seahawks swung and missed on a couple of players early in free agency. They weren't able to lock up Kevin Zeitler or Joe Tooney. But on Wednesday afternoon, that finally changed. They got themselves a big fish, trading for Gabe Jackson, sending a 2021 fifth-round pick to the Las Vegas Raiders to acquire the 29-year-old veteran. And we've talked about Jackson a couple times in this show, Rob. His calling card is protecting the quarterback. He's been one of the best pass-protecting guards in the NFL for more than half a decade, really since coming into the league in 2014. And I think what made him most appealing to the Seahawks is he has played extensive snaps at both guard positions, so he can play on that left side in a pinch.
Oh, there's just so many things it's about exciting about Gabe Jackson, at least in my opinion. It's not only the fact that, as you mentioned, he's still 29 years old. It's the fact that he played against elite competition all throughout his collegiate career. He did it on both sides. As you just mentioned, he has been one of the NFL's best in terms of pass protection. He has the size and strength to be able to move people in the running game. He does have underrated feet, at least in my opinion, to be able to get to the second level. And he's got a little bit of nasty to him. So that I think that is going to just add that much more physicality to Seattle up front. We're going to be joined by Sosa from Locked On Rams a little bit later. And I think that he's going to kind of be able to talk to us a little bit about what we can expect from Seattle's offensive line moving forward. And we have been kind of speculating a little bit about what Shane Waldron's addition might mean, what Andy Dickerson's addition might mean. I think that the trade for Gabe Jackson shows that the Seahawks might be willing to look for some offensive linemen who are a bit lighter on their feet, but they're not going to abandon that physicality at the point of attack that has made the Seahawks one of the best just downhill running football teams all throughout the Pete Carroll era. So to me, Corbin, I thought that it was a home run. I'm excited about this, especially for a fifth-round pick. What is the likelihood that Seattle would be able to find a possible Pro Bowl guard immediately with a fifth-round selection? I think this is exactly the type of move that John Schneider needed to make, the type of move that Russell Wilson wanted to make. I think the Seahawks fans should be very excited about this particular move.
And I can tell you Russell Wilson definitely was monitoring this situation, because as soon as the trade was announced, I actually tweeted a GIF of Russell Wilson celebrating on the field. And I said, live looking, dangerous Wilson, hearing that Gabe Jackson's coming to Seattle. And within 2 minutes, he liked it. And so he was definitely monitoring this closely. This is the type of player that he was wanting the Seahawks to bring in. I'm sure at the start of free agency, seeing them come up empty on Zeitler and Tooney didn't necessarily sit well with him, but they were able to make up for that by going out and getting Jackson, a player, as you mentioned, that at 330 pounds, I think he's lighter on his feet than advertised. I don't think zone blocking is necessarily a strength for him. He hasn't been quite as good in the run blocking department the last couple of years, ironically playing for Tom Cable now as the offensive line coach of the Raiders, but he's still been respectable. And the Raiders were running a bit more downhill last season, at least based on the film I've watched so far. So they were playing to his strengths and Rodney Hudson's strengths in the middle of that line. And you could still see him blowing people up off the snap. And I think maybe my favorite part of Gabe Jackson's game, it only takes you a couple minutes watching film, is seeing how he finishes plays. He wants to put defenders on their backside. He doesn't care if you're a defensive end, a defensive tackle. a linebacker, if you're a safety that dares to come up into the box and he gets his hands on you, he is going to plant you. And sometimes he's going to do it after the whistle, and he gets caught doing it sometimes. But he has that attitude, that orneriness that you're looking for from offensive linemen. And with Mike Solari still being the offensive line coach, I've been saying this all along, I believe there is going to be a blend of approaches. I don't expect that this is going to be 100% Sean McVay's offense, and we're going to be running mostly stretch and wide zone. I think you're still going to see inside zone. You're still going to see some of those downhill concepts that really fit Damian Lewis and now Gabe Jackson. I'm curious to see who ends up being the center that these two big fellas are sandwiching. Right now, we haven't seen anything as far as centers are concerned being linked to the Seahawks, but I expect that that will change here in the next few days, or at minimum, they are going to be using one of their few draft picks they have left to get a center for the 2021 season. But this is a big addition for the Seahawks, and there's no question about it. Not the only move Seattle made. We're going to talk to Sosa Cremenges about tight end Gerald Everett coming over from our division rivals, the Rams, joining the Seahawks. We'll talk about him in the third quarter. But Nick Bolor, the fullback and special team standout, also agreeing to a two-year contract to rejoin the Seahawks. This move does not surprise me. I know there are plenty of people out there that are like, why are we bringing a fullback back into the fold, especially with Shane Waldron? Probably never going to use a fullback with him. But again, I would be, you know, I'd hold back a little bit on pump of the brakes a little bit on that, because we don't know what the offense is going to look like. They might still have some two-back sets in this offense. And really, they're not re-signing him for his offensive contributions. Anytime he's on the field, if he catches a ball for you or something, that's just a cherry on top, because he was not named a Pro Bowler because he was a fullback. He was a Pro Bowler last year because he's one of the best special teams players in the NFL. And he was a big reason for that turnaround this team had last year, being one of the best special teams units in the league.
No, absolutely. I mean, he's not one of the flashiest players out there. That's not the position he's going to play as a fullback and on special teams. But at the same time, he's one of those glue guys. And one of those reasons why the Seattle, as you just mentioned, made such huge strides on special teams a year ago. And that's worth kind of reflecting back on that. You know, remember, it's right before the beginning of the season when Brian Schneider, left the team, and Seattle was forced to go with their assistant special teams coordinator at that point, Larry Izzo. And in his first season directing the show, the Seahawks wind up having one of the most improved special teams units in all of the NFL. And so a huge part of that, what was the aforementioned players. So to me, that's what's so big about this, is that Seattle was able to bring him back. They're able to bring him back on a team-friendly deal, use him, what he does effectively. He just brings some energy. He is a very reliable tackler. You do have two other young linebackers who I think are basically being groomed right behind him, in Cody Barton and in Ben Burke-Kirvin. And so to me, this is another nice move. I think that the home run was the move for Gabe Jackson. But at the same time, I think this was a good, strong single up the middle as well for the Seahawks, for a team that needed to string along a few hits here in a row.
Yeah, and Bolor is such a good locker room presence as well. Coaches and teammates rave about him. They love having him around. And so that matters a lot too. So not just the fact he's a darn good special teams player, but the fact that he's a really good character guy to have around. And he can play a number of positions on offense if you need him to. He has started games at linebacker in the NFL. And so he is truly a jack of all trades in terms of NFL talk. And so I think it's a wise move bringing him back on a two-year contract. When we return in the second quarter, the Gabe Jackson trade was a big deal, upgrading the offensive line, but it has left the Seahawks with only three draft picks in April. Rob and I are going to discuss the difficulties John Schneider is going to face going into this draft and look at a few ways that maybe they can still add a bit more draft capital before we get to the end of April. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. We've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on all bars. Now is the time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It is Built Bar Madness. Today's matchup is salted caramel versus cookie dough chunk. Man, I can't pick between those two. Two of my favorite flavors. I wish I could have one of both right now. Go to BuiltBar.com or to @bar_built on Twitter. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joining us for a Thursday show, Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. As we talked about last quarter, Rob, the Seahawks making a big move. It really is becoming an arms race in the NFC West. We saw Rodney Hudson, ironically coming from the Raiders as well, being traded to the Arizona Cardinals yesterday. So the Cardinals upgraded their offensive line. The 49ers gave a massive extension to Trent Williams to keep one of the best tackles in the sport, protecting Jimmy Garoppolo, whoever else is back there playing quarterback. I'm sure what's going to be going on there in the Bay Area. So those two teams upgraded their offensive line. The Rams still could make a move or two to solidify that group. The Seahawks decided we don't want to be left behind, went out and they got Gabe Jackson from the Raiders, but it came at a cost. And normally giving up a fifth round pick for a player of Gabe Jackson's caliber is not a big deal. And in fact, I'm still going to say they totally had to make this move. The problem is they only had four draft picks going into this, or going into the start of free agency, and now they have only three left: a second rounder, a fourth rounder, and a seventh round pick. So we're talking some huge gaps here. They don't have a first or a third, and then they have a fourth, then they don't pick again to the seventh. And we've talked about this time and time again. This truly is going to be the biggest challenge that John Schneider has faced going into a draft, in large part because of the trade that was made last July to get Jamal Adams. But at the time, Schneider said one of the reasons he was willing to do that was because of the uncertainty going into this draft. You didn't have your normal scouting process. We don't have a scouting combine this year. Pro days being done at schools. Teams just are out in the dark way more than they normally are. And the draft's already a crapshoot to begin with. So you got to wonder if the willingness to give up another draft pick, a fifth rounder, to get Jackson has to do somewhat with that as well, that maybe John Schneider's feeling like if there's a draft where we're not going to pick many times, this is the year to do it.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think that that is something that John Schneider has been basically focused on this entire process is ever since the pandemic hit, and it completely has thrown the entire scouting process out the window, or at least the scouting process the NFL teams have been using for a long time. Then yeah, you have to start using those draft picks as the commodities that they are, and to be able to trade or use them to acquire proven players, because the NFL draft, let's face it, the NFL draft is a little bit of a crapshoot. It's a little bit of throwing darts at a dartboard, and it's so much more complicated this year. And you know me, with my NFL draft background, I want to see the Seahawks have draft picks. It's much more interesting for me for those 3 days in April. But no one wins a Super Bowl in April. And John Schneider and the Seahawks obviously are trying to make sure that they're the ones hoisting the trophies up in, you know, late January and early February. And so I think that this is the savvy way of doing things, quite frankly, because this draft class is very good at a certain couple of positions. And because Seattle does have three draft selections right now, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that number jump up if the team feels like it needs to, but I don't think that you have to this year. You already have enough, in at least in my opinion, players at the most critical positions to have some success. Now, you made a really good point a little bit earlier about the arms race that we're seeing in the NFC West division. Obviously, each of those other three clubs are going to continue to get better, and all three of them have got better through the free agent time period. But at the same time, I think that rather than trying to stick your finger in the dike, so to speak, as far as trying to stop the flood coming in with you only having four draft picks, if you have these opportunities to trade a fifth round selection for a Pro Bowler, then you do so. So I think that that this is absolutely part of Schneider's strategy, is just recognizing that, look, we have four draft picks, or we had four draft picks. We already are very limited in what we can do, but that can't stop us from being aggressive when we know there's a good football player who does fit our system well. Let's go get him. And so, again, I applaud the club for recognizing, rather than being hindered by the fact that they have four draft picks, it's almost like they're a little bit more emboldened. Like, let's go make these moves, because we don't know who's going to be available in the fifth round in a couple of months from now for the draft.
Yeah, and I had some readers that, when I posted the news on Jackson, immediately said desperation move. And at first I thought about it like, you know, maybe you could say that because they missed on a couple of the guards they tried to get earlier, and maybe there was a sense of desperation. But the more I thought about it again, you're going to be hard-pressed to get a player as talented as Gabe Jackson in the fifth round, even in a really solid offensive line class. And with him having 2 years left in his contract, I think that's the big deal here. If they were trading for a one-year rental, then I would maybe say this really does reek of desperation. But you're getting a player that still isn't quite 30 years old, and he has 2 years left in his contract. Is he getting paid decent money? Absolutely. There's a reason the Raiders were thinking about releasing him. But it's totally worth that price point to keep your quarterback happy and hopefully avoid having further trade speculation as a result. And this was a move that needed to be made. And so I don't have any issues with giving up a fifth rounder for a player of his caliber that, to me, is still in the prime of his career. It's not like he is an aging player that is toward the end. I think he's still got a lot of good football left in him. So it seems like it's a wise trade. But going back to the draft pick situation, we know John Schneider is a mastermind when it comes to working up and down the draft. And even with just one pick in the first three rounds, you have to figure he's going to find a way to trade down and recoup at least one pick with that second rounder. You figure he's going to try to do that. I think that the other thing that is on the table now, maybe more so than it was before, because the Seahawks are already right back up against the salary cap, they have ways they can create instant space. They can restructure Russell Wilson's contract or Bobby Wagner's contract. They can extend a number of players. There are still things they can do to open up cap space without trading anyone. But I think that John Schneider at least has to be exploring some possibilities with a few players, checking around the league and seeing what is the value draft capital-wise if I move a few players. And I'm going to bring up Jaren Reed again. And it's, again, this is not because I think Jaren Reed is a bad player. I think Jaren Reed is a really good defensive tackle. And he came on late last year in the second half as a pass rusher. That's the best he's looked in a year and a half. He looked like his 2018 version. But at the same time, that coincided with the arrival of Carlos Dunlap. And I think it had more to do with the edge rusher coming in than Reed just unlocking his pass rushing prowess. And you just extended Puna Ford. You've got a couple young defensive tackles that you like. He would be a player with his cap hit that I would at least be calling around and seeing, can I get a fourth round pick for him? Because if John Schneider is able to get a second, fourth round pick, he might be able to do some finagling to get another pick off of one of those. I think once you get into the fifth round, it's very difficult to move around and add picks. But I think this year, especially a fourth rounder, you might be able to work into a fifth and a seventh or something like that, where you're able to add another pick. And so you could certainly consider moving him. Tyler Lockett, I think it would be a bad idea, but I can see with him having 1 year left in his contract, if a team called, they would maybe at least entertain it. It just seems like it's a situation where Schneider might have to explore that because they could use some cap space and they certainly could use another pick or two going into April.
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, you'd love to have more draft picks. It's going to be interesting to see if they are willing to trade some of their veteran players. There's a couple of players that immediately come to mind for me as well that I think, well, I'd be curious to see what the rest of the league might be willing to give up for some of those players. And I'll mention them in just a moment. But to me, you hit the nail on the head when you talked about the extension of players. We're seeing that happen with a lot of teams all throughout the league. I've been surprised that Seattle has been unable at this point or unwilling at this point to be able to create some contract extension, be able to give themselves a little bit more salary cap flexibility. To me, that's the logical next step in my mind. So that way you can try to bring in, again, some proven veterans rather than gambling on rookies in a draft class that is a bigger gamble than it's ever been in league history. So as far as the players that I think that might be on the trade block, you might be at least looking to see what you might get. You mentioned Jaron Reed. I think that that's a really a possibility there. It makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons. And all of these players are guys that I think that the Seahawks should try to keep, but they're up against the cap. They have to make some tough decisions here. So I think Jaron Reed, I've mentioned before, I think that Bobby Wagner has a lot he's still Bobby Wagner. He is still a Pro Bowler. And so a guy that is somebody that might be able to get you a higher selection there in Jaron Reed. You mentioned Tyler Lockett. I would say Quandre Diggs at the safety position, considering Seattle's depth there. These are all four of those are players that I really think help Seattle be a playoff contender, the reigning NFC West champions. But at the same time, because Seattle is in the position that they are in, if they are unable or unwilling to extend any of the contracts, they're really going to be stuck. And so I think at that point, they are going to be forced to make some trades. I don't know that necessarily it's going to have to happen right now. I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle winds up trading a veteran on draft day to try to get some more picks. And then, of course, we know what John Schneider's done at the end of the last two drafts. He's traded to get a pick in the very, very end of the current year by trading one of next year's picks. So don't be surprised at all if he decides to trade some of the selections in 2022 to jump back into the 2021 draft class. It should not go unnoticed by Seahawks fans that both Pete Carroll and John Schneider signed extensions themselves personally this offseason. So I think that he has the confidence to know that if he's trading future draft picks, he is the piper that's going to have to pay the bills because he's the one who's going to be around to make those selections.
Knowing John Schneider's history, he's never had less than 8 selections in a draft. Knowing his history, I absolutely anticipate that the Seahawks are going to end the draft with at least 6-7 new players. I think they're going to find a way to do it, whether that's just trading down a bunch somehow, trading away a proven player to get a pick or two, whatever it takes. I feel like they're still going to find a way. I don't think this is a year where they suddenly turn 3 picks into 11 like we saw them do a few years ago, but without having a first-round pick makes it much more difficult to do that. But I expect that the Seahawks are going to end up with at least twice as many selections as they currently have with just 3 picks. That's the way John Schneider operates. Fans should have faith that he's going to find a way to get some extra picks, whether that means he's trading back in using future picks, trading current players, whatever. He always seems to find a way. He's one of the best at maneuvering the draft. And so we'll just have to see what happens. As you mentioned, some of those trades might not happen till draft day. If there's a player that falls and the Seahawks are like, I want to see if I can get back into the third round, then they might consider moving one of those players. And that's what makes the draft such a fun process every year when it unfolds for those 3 days over the weekend. So we'll just have to wait and see. We come back in the third quarter. The Seahawks just added a dynamic athletic tight end in Gerald Everett coming over from a division rival, the Rams, and reuniting with Shane Waldron. Sosa Cremenges of Locked On Rams is going to break down the newest addition for the Seahawks and where he fits into their new scheme with Waldron at the helm. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. The Seahawks signing their first player in free agency on the offensive side of the football on Wednesday. And it's a name that has been speculated for quite some time, pretty much the entire offseason since Shane Waldron became the new offensive coordinator. Gerald Everett, the tight end, now arriving in Seattle. Joining us to talk about Everett's game, Sosa Cremenges of Locked On Rams. Feels like you and I are getting together on this podcast like every 5 minutes.
Yeah, we can't get away from each other, it looks like. It's been a fun first season, but you know, I think me and you have had probably the most interaction so far.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the Rams and Seahawks played like 18 games against each other last season, and so we've had a lot of opportunities to chat about our respective teams. But before we talk about Everett, I want to talk Shane Waldron here first, because Seattle interviewed a number of different candidates for this offensive coordinator job, and apparently Waldron was the one that Russell Wilson wanted. He had a primary part in that process, deciding who the new coordinator was going to be to replace Brian Schottenheimer. He handpicked Shane Waldron. Looking at Waldron, he's never been an offensive coordinator in the NFL. In fact, he hadn't done it at the college level either. What would your expectations be for what type of offense Seahawks fans should expect to see? Is it going to be just the Rams offense going north, or do you expect to see a variation of sorts?
Yeah, it's a guessing game at this point in time, right? It's hard to say. Like you said, he's never been an offensive coordinator before. Now, he did have like this little fun stint where, you know, Sean McVay allowed him to call plays, but it was in the preseason, I believe in 2019. So he likes to get his coaches a little bit, you know, primed for bigger roles, and he's done a very good job at doing that. But, you know, I expect it to be somewhat similar to what the Rams run. Now, you know, looking back at some of the Seahawks offenses over the past couple of years, it feels like they put a lot of pressure on Russell Wilson to make things happen, whereas, you know, Sean McVay does a lot, you know, in terms of himself, putting a lot more pressure on himself as opposed to Jared Goff. Now, you know, that might be the quarterback limitation there. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if that's any different with Matthew Stafford. But I think there's going to be a lot more, you know, zone style concepts in the running game. I think you can expect that. Maybe a little bit more play action, a little bit of stuff under center, which is probably not, you know, what Seahawks fans are used to at this point in time. So very similar to what the Rams run, I think. You know, that's kind of what he's been doing since 2017, since he's been with the Rams. And prior to that, you know, he was in Washington with Sean McVay as well. So they had that connection prior to Los Angeles. So, you know, I'm expecting it to be something similar to what the Rams run, a lot of that zone-based stuff, play action game off of that. And then, you know, like to push the ball deep, obviously, with some of the receivers they have there. Russell Wilson might have the best deep arm in the league. So I expect it to be somewhat similar to what the Rams run, but you know, it's anyone's guess at this point in time, because like you said, he's never called plays before.
It's a really good point, Sosa. And thank you, of course, for joining us. One thing I want to ask about is, besides Shane Waldron, of course, Andy Dickerson also followed him going north up to Seattle. Now, I don't know much of anything about Andy Dickerson. I know little about Shane Waldron. So I'm just curious. I hate to put you on the spot here, but if there's anything that you know much about your experience with Andy Dickerson, the way that they have built that offensive line, what can Seahawks fans, at least a scratch in the surface, what can you tell us a little bit about Andy Dickerson?
Yeah, so I don't know much about Dickerson either, but you know, if we can extrapolate from what the Rams like to do or what they have done over the past couple of years, is ties back to the Shane Waldron thing. You know, a lot of that zone-based stuff up front. I think you can probably expect that, and you know, it's been obviously prevalent in the NFL across the league for many years since Mike Shanahan kind of brought that to the forefront. A lot of stuff where, you know, they'll start to go work east and west and expect running backs to, you know, use their vision to find their own holes. And once they see those holes come about, they plant their foot and get to going north and south as opposed to left and right. And so that's kind of what I expect. You know, the Rams have done a pretty good job, I think, at developing their offensive lines over the last few years. They had that one year that was a little bit of a glitch in 2019 where, you know, they lost two starting offensive linemen, one of who was a Pro Bowl caliber lineman. So that was a little bit hard for them to get over. But that's kind of what I expected, you know, a little bit more lighter offensive linemen as opposed to those gap style, you know, man blocking concepts with those bigger guys that we've seen on the, you know, offensive line of the Seahawks recently, guys like Mike Iupati, who are much stronger as opposed to better movers, guys that kind of go, you know, climb to the second level. So that's kind of what I expect now. You know, I'm excited to see what kind of offense it is going to be. And ultimately, if they do kind of usher that same style of offense with the Rams, I think they'll kind of make that transition into a little bit more mobility on the offensive line and start to use a little bit more zone concepts as opposed to those man concepts.
That's maybe the most intriguing thing for me going into this season, because especially after just trading for Gabe Jackson, who is a 330-pound mauler. Now, he has played in zone blocking schemes the last couple years, but you still have Mike Solari there too. So that makes me wonder if we're still going to see, at least in the first season here, more of a blend of what Waldron wants to do with what the Seahawks have done in the past. So, and like you said, it's anybody's guess right now what's going to happen. Now, Gerald Everett, again, this is a name that has been floated around as a potential target for the Seahawks ever since Waldron got hired. I've seen Josh Reynolds' name thrown out there too, just to bring in some familiar faces. Obviously, Everett is an impressive athlete. He showed off his speed, quickness, and hops at the combine. You can see it on the field too, but never had over 430 receiving yards in a season. Was that just because Tyler Higbee was in front of him and he was kind of overshadowed, or is it safe to say that maybe he didn't quite meet expectations in his four seasons with the team?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, but mostly the first, you know, the former there. It's that, you know, when you have a Tyler Higbee, it's hard to get the opportunities that you deserve, unfortunately. And, you know, what's a little bit funny about that is Shane Waldron was the former tight ends coach for the Rams in 2017 when they actually moved back and drafted Gerald Everett. That was their first pick of the Sean McVay era in Los Angeles. So clearly a guy that they valued highly. Like you mentioned, an absolutely tremendous athlete. You know, he could be considered a big wide receiver, but at the same time, you know, he's worked on his blocking. He's gotten significantly better as a blocker now. You know, he's not George Kittle. He's not going to, you know, blow guys up and put them on their back, but he's willing to block. You know, he can put his hand in the dirt. He can line up in the backfield. We've seen him line up in that fullback formation, that H-back stuff a little bit. And I don't think the Rams did a very good job, to be honest, at, you know, utilizing what kind of talent he is, because that's the kind of guy that I envision, you know, a lot more interesting usage rate for. You want to flex him outside of the numbers, get some mismatches going. There's not many safeties that are going to keep up with him, I can tell you that. Linebacker's too slow, safety's too small. Good route runner, good hands, and he's got the speed, you know, to make things happen. And not only that, but I think the biggest point of intrigue with Gerald Everett is that the play only begins when he actually catches the ball. That's where he's best, you know, after the catch. He's so good at breaking tackles. You know, I look at the numbers from PFF here. Since he got drafted in 2017, only two tight ends have broken more tackles in the NFL than he has on receptions. And, you know, Travis Kelce and George Kittle get a lot more playing time than he does. So you can understand why, you know, those numbers are a little bit higher for those guys. But yeah, this guy, you know, he's a special after the catch threat, makes a lot of guys miss tackles, very good threat as a receiver. I think he's going to start to see, you know, a lot more targets in Seattle. And I think ultimately we could be looking back at this move in a year's time and say, you know, how the heck did this guy get away? Like, how did he, you know, develop so quickly? I think we could be looking at, you know, that kind of a scenario here.
It's interesting. I'm happy that you mentioned that. Obviously, Seahawks fans are going to be excited to hear, you know, anytime the idea of a tight end has been mentioned, along with the players that you just mentioned, they're going to be excited about, because that has been a position of concern for a long, long time in Seattle. And of course, when you look at the Rams, one of the positions that has been so good for them has been all along that defensive line. You know, for you being as close as you are with the Rams, me being kind of taking a step back, I was shocked by the decision to trade away Michael Brockers. And at the same time, from a Seahawk perspective, also very concerned about the fact that you were able to retain Leonard Floyd. And so can you just talk about what you see as far as the Rams defensive line moving forward?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, they traded Michael Brockers, and that was strictly a, you know, cap money related move. They obviously didn't want to get rid of that kind of a guy. Signed him last offseason to a 3-year deal, which was kind of funny because he actually signed a deal with the Baltimore Ravens, which fell through due to a failed physical. So that was a little bit weird, but, you know, he's a huge leader, or was a huge leader in the locker room, a huge voice, a captain, you know, a guy that everyone could trust. Very good run stuffer, so they're going to miss that up front. But at the same time, you know, I think they felt comfortable moving forward with the guys they had, and specifically in the run stuffing department, because at this point in time, Brockers doesn't really bring that much, you know, in terms of the pass rushing aspect. And so the Rams signed A'shaun Robinson last year, pretty much a very redundant kind of, you know, skill set and talent. You look at guys like Sebastian Joseph Day, who developed greatly last year, should be a starter going into this year. So I feel like when you look at some of the skill sets on the roster, as well as just the cap saving aspect of it, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that at some point either he was going to get traded, cut, or asked for a pay cut, which he was, and he denied, and deservedly so. He deserves every dollar he's making. So good for him on that. Now, in terms of the Leonard Floyd move, A little bit expensive, I would say, but at the same time, you know, there were reports from big media that the New York Giants as well as the Denver Broncos were kind of closing in on signing Leonard Floyd. And so the Rams might have felt the pressure of that and sort of, you know, kind of got pigeonholed into paying a little bit more. But at the same time, you know, I can see why. A dominant edge defender in terms of the running game, one of the best in the league, in my opinion. A little bit inconsistent as a pass rusher, but at the same time, you know, I think he proved his worth last year for the Rams. He was very good on those stunts, very athletic, allows them to do a lot of different things up front. So, you know, I felt, you know, I think they felt the comfort and some consistency they wanted up front. So that's kind of how that went, I believe. And, you know, it's going to be a nice move for the Rams to keep some continuity at that edge spot going into this next season.
These two teams, they have one heck of a rivalry in the NFC West. We saw them play three times last year, play in the playoffs. And assuming Russell Wilson is going to be under center, I think at this point it's pretty safe to say he will, but the rumors are still persisting. But assuming number three is under center, I think that the stakes are going to be raised yet another level in 2021 now that Shane Waldron is in Seattle as the new offensive coordinator. And, of course, Gerald Everett, maybe another former Ram could join. Maybe Blythe or Reynolds, one of those players, might be coming to Seattle at some point. We'll just have to wait and see. But we appreciate taking the time to chat with Sosa about these newcomers coming to the Seahawks.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys for having me on. It's going to be fun watching this battle next year.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob Rang at Rob Rang. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Go Hawks!